altitude's undefeated.
Crap, Rainbow, punch it up, whatever it was in.
Not a huge fan of it,
I don't know where I was going. I looked like I was running and started to talk to someone. I don't know what I was doing.
I tell you what, Matt, we don't get much by you, that's for sure. From you and analysis in your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Welcome back to The Grind, Rapids fans. My name is Matt Pollard. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. It is Monday, August 14th, 2023. And the Colorado Rapids are finally back in action in MLS League play this coming Sunday against Los Angeles Football Club. But the news of the day, the only thing that anyone on the social medias in burgundy and blue is discussing right now is the macro and micro state of the club as it relates to the much anticipated, the hotly controversial, and the much discussed and amped up charged Porrick Smith press conference that happened earlier today at Dick's Sporting Goods Park as we closed out the 2023 MLS secondary transfer window. Here to talk about that, amongst several other things, my good friend, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
It's good to talk to you, Matt. It's been a couple weeks. You got to talk to Babiak, our staff photographer, who was often on assignment in New Zealand and Australia. That must have been fun, right?
Yeah, no, John is living his best life, folks, and for anybody who's been in and around knowing his situation and what's gone on in his personal life from a medical standpoint, Mark, he is living his best life regardless of the USWNT's crashing out of the round of 16 at the Women's World Cup, and he's having fun, and he's covering this major tournament, and obviously he'll be, you know, after the final this coming Sunday, early morning here in the Mountain Time Zone, he'll be flying off to go do more humanitarian stuff in Ukraine. So it didn't come up U.S. Women's National Team. I have a sneaky suspicion, Mark, that it's actually going to be coming up England, but we'll see what the Aussies have to say about that. But it's certainly coming up John Babiak, and good for him, Mark, that he got to that, you know, John's a lucky member of the Rapids community and that he's missed everything that has gone on in the last 6 weeks. But, you know, Mark, how are you? And then obviously some big personal news as far as the family's concerned coming up in mid-October.
Oh, yeah, thanks. I am fine. The kids were away at summer camp. They came back yesterday. I got to do one of those things that I don't highly recommend anyone have to do, which is drive 9 hours in a clip to go retrieve your children from the Maryland Panhandle, and then have a mediocre brunch in York, Pennsylvania before we return. Matt is referring to my son's imminent 13th birthday, which in Judaism is the coming-of-age ceremony known as Bar Mitzvah. The kid is about five lines away from having a half-decent Haftorah portion. For those few listeners who know what the hell that means, his Torah portion we locked up a couple months ago. He's got like one more thing he's got to learn from us. The invitations are out. Matt, you're welcome to come, but I didn't want to send you an invitation because my wife and I had like a lot of conversation about this. She tried not to invite a lot of people. She didn't invite a lot of friends and family, mostly because she just didn't want to make it a big deal, but also because I think she knows that there's like a gambit where, and everybody knows this for weddings, like, you've got a rich uncle, you never see him, he's not going to come to the wedding. Do you invite him to the wedding on the hopes that he buys you a nice china pattern? Or do you not invite him knowing that, like, it's really nicer to realistically know that a person shouldn't be obligated to buy you a gift for not coming to your big event? So that was kind of the way my wife broke. I invited a few members of the family who I thought might come if they wanted to surprise us, but would be okay mailing in a $180 check if they felt like they wanted my son to go to college someday. So I don't know. That was my gambit, but it's not going to be a big deal. To be honest, the party on Friday night is going to be like about 50 people. And it's mostly going to be playing board games and eating shawarma because that's what Iggy wanted for his bar mitzvah. I got a weird kid. I'm okay with that. It's kind of fun. Anyhow.
So just to be clear, Mark, you're content with me attending this via Zoom and then sending the check, right?
You do not have to send a check. You should just put all that money directly.
I'm helping out with Iggy's college fund. Tuition keeps going up, Mark. At the very least, I'm ruining your living room for the next month by getting him the full-scale Millennium Falcon Lego set. You choose which poison you want me to add to that, Rabbi.
I'd rather you send him to school.
Okay. Mark, we're not going to spend a whole lot of time on this. LAFC crashed out spectacularly in League's Cup. They were up 2-0 on Monterrey, and then they gave up 3 goals in the final 22 minutes, plus stoppage time. It was very disappointing, not unlike their loss in Champions League in the final to Club León, and they're doing this now on full rest, Mark. They played on Saturday or Sunday, or maybe it was Friday, so they'll have ample rest in order to prepare for the Colorado Rapids on Sunday, so we're not going to spend a whole lot of time on this, Mark. I think LAFC is a very good team. Rabbi, the Colorado Rapids have never won at LAFC. I am thoroughly expecting a multi-goal victory from LAFC this Sunday at BMO, whatever, since it's no longer Bank of California Stadium. And I say that is regardless of whether or not we see a MLS debut from a Rafael Navajo or a Sydney Tavares, who I have learned, Mark, should be in training and fully available as of Wednesday this week. Rabbi, you've got a loss on Sunday, right? We can move on.
I think that the Rapids, the only time I ever famously predicted this match, LAFC versus the Rapids, it was for the Denver Post, and I was wrong. So the Rapids went out and actually won a surprise match. They just have a very good team. They have some like legendary famous players who don't even get off the bench, like Giorgio Chiellini, which is like kind of a remarkable thing. They've had really good production with Ilya Sanchez. Although he doesn't necessarily start these days, but Buanga was playing at the beginning of the season really, really well. A player that I was excited to see is Stipe Buke, although I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that right, and then he hasn't barely gotten off the bench for this team. They've also kind of brought in some players who, will be exciting for people to see. Matt was basically like, shut up, Rabbi, we just want to get through this and move on to all the important Rapids news. But yeah, this is a really talented team that might be out for revenge. They could also come out flat, having come off of League's Cup with kind of high expectations. But I do think this is a very deep and complete team that really could do damage to us if they decide to. Although, to be honest, Carlos Vela is slowing down these days, and he did not start this last match. In fact, he didn't even make the bench, so I don't know what's up with that. Maybe, does he have an injury, Matt, that I don't know about?
Who is this?
A guy named Carlos Vela.
Carlos Vela? I'm not sure. I don't know off the top of my head. Does that matter even, Rabbi?
Probably not. They're better at every position than us, no matter what. That's a fair point. But Carlos is still recovering. There's no important update, but he won't be up for the game. It's similar to what happened in Minnesota. I'm quoting from the official press release about whether he was going to be in for the game. Well, what's the rest of that quote? It won't be anything long term, but he's not at 100% yet, and he's recovering, Chirondolo explained in the press conference. That was in the match leading up to their game against Real Salt Lake, which was a week ago.
League Cup game. So they lost in the quarterfinal, so this would have been the round of 16.
So anyhow, so they probably won't have Vela for this game, and it probably won't matter. You said it really well.
The Rapids are going to come out. They're going to play really energetically for like 20 minutes, Mark. They're going to huff and puff. They're going to be getting outplayed from a technical quality and a tactical standpoint. They're going to make one mistake. It's probably going to lead to an LAFC goal. And then the floodgates are going to open. And then it's going to be about managing. It's going to be about damage control at that point. So that the final scoreline is not super embarrassing.
Yeah, I'll add the you said everything of what we've seen from Rapids games from the last 6-8 games. But I'll just add, the Rapids will make some nice passes. They'll be a little bit too sharp. They won't be settled cleanly, or they'll be like 2 feet, 1 foot a little far. And meanwhile, LAFC will make good passes. They will settle them properly, and they will look better doing it. And the margins are very thin, that the Rapids typically look pretty good, And then when you take a closer look, the team that they're playing looks better. And that's why we lose.
Some good Rapids news that we have, Mark, with a win over Tacoma Defiance on the weekend. Colorado Rapids 2 have officially clinched the playoffs. They are top of the table in MLS Next Pro. They are the first MLS Next Pro team to clinch a playoff spot, Mark. And this is the 2s. This is the Rapidos. This is the Cobras with a fantastic performance and win over Tacoma, coming off of a loss in which mostly first team players lost to Houston Dynamo 2, who started a 15-year-old, Mark. So congratulations to Rapids 2, to Eric Boucher, to Brian Crookham for everything that they've done. Mark, your thoughts on this being a milestone for Rapids 2, given how disappointing last season was, how good this year was. And you've got some news as someone who has a spreadsheet on Miguel Alvarado.
Yeah, it's great to see the 2s doing really well. I think I was personally a bit frustrated that the senior team, in order to get some work in for their guys who hadn't played in a little while, played a midweek game last week at the end of the week. I guess it was Wednesday or Thursday, where they took on Houston, and Houston schwacked them 3-2 with a 15-year-old in the midfield, like you were saying. And they basically started, 8 of 11 regular starters for the Colorado Rapids. The only major differences were mostly at the corners. The fullbacks were both bench players or Rapids 2 players. Everybody else was Rapid starters. They started Diego Rubio. They started Rafael Navajo. And that was our first look at Rafael Navajo, Matt. And that was, I thought he didn't really see a lot of the ball. He had one nice little tricky dribble in the first half that looked slick. But other than that, we didn't see much of him. It was kind of the classic of like, they didn't get the ball to him very often. So Diego Rubio had a fantastic curled ball into the top corner. That was really great. So that's kind of the hope moving forward, that we have a healthy Diego Rubio, some other people to set him up, and this team might be able to go 500 the rest of the season. Probably not starting with LAFC, but we'll see. U.S. youth national team U15s played a tournament in CONCACAF, which they won, which is pretty impressive. The final game was, of course, versus our arch rivals El Tri Mexico, and the U.S. won that game. I believe the final score was 3-1. One defender, Miguel Alvarado, who plays for the Colorado Rapids, he's a great story because he's burgundy and blue through and through. He started with the Colorado Rapids Youth Soccer Club, which is really like a community youth setup that feeds into our academy teams once players get older. Miguel for the Rapids came up for the USA Youth National Team came up and got minutes. He started the final game. So congratulations to him. I think it's a good marker. We've had players before who have really had great momentary success at the youth national level, and then kind of nothing came of it. Matt Hundley is the most notable name out of that, but we've also had players who were exceptional at the youth level. I believe Sam Vines was identified at the U18, U19 level by the U.S. national team, and turned into exactly what we hoped they would be. So keep your eye on Miguel Navarro. Alvarado. Keep your eyes on other Rapids youth players.
Two other former Rapids, Mark, that somehow slipped my mind when it came to when I wrapped up the transfer window of last week. You had Austin Trusty, former Colorado Rapid, I guess technically a homegrown, Mark, but from Philly. He was with the Rapids, sold and then loaned to Arsenal, and then he was on loan last year for now Tom Brady's Birmingham City. He has made a permanent move to Sheffield United. I don't know if you've seen, Mark, I know you are not as much in the weeds in the championship that I am. Sheffield, the Blades, sold their two best players they had. They were a big part of their promotion push, and they've mostly, similar to Luton, been signing guys that are on that fringe between like Premier League relegation fodder and championship to basically set themselves up to be stable for next year. Trust he's going to play. He's going to get a lot of minutes. I think he fits what they're trying to do system-wise. I don't think they're going to be very successful as a team this year. And then Andre Shinyashiki, former Colorado Rapid had his contract with Charlotte FC terminated by mutual consent after allegations, but no actually being charged with sexual assault when he was in Charlotte. And then that blew up a trademark that would have sent him to RSL in exchange for Justin Miram. And I think there were some reported other assets that might have gone in there as well. In any case, nobody really wanted to touch him. Charlotte didn't really want to play him. Hey, get me out of my contract. And Shinyashiki, via his Italian passport, rabbi, is off to the eastern side of Europe to Neftchibaka, Neftchi, second word, Baku, Neftchibaku, which is an Azerbaijan mark. If we're rating Transfer Market on anything of value, Rabbi, which I think is in the ballpark but not always accurate, Andrei Shinyashiki is now one of the most expensive or highest valued players in Transfer Market in the Azerbaijani league. Mark, as a Gooner and as a Rapid fan, what do you make of Trusty's time on loan with from Arsenal and then what he could do at Sheffield? And I mean, good for Shinyashiki, but we're probably never seeing him in MLS ever again.
I don't even know about the good for Shinyashiki. I'll get to that in a second. But I think your question about
technically innocent until proven guilty, Rabbi. And so,
yeah, well, that's not the point that I was going to make. But thank you, Matt. Thanks, counselor. Yeah, Austin Trusty is, I think he'll probably see more minutes for Sheffield United, although he played plenty for Birmingham, but he didn't get into their first match this last weekend against Crystal Palace. Palace won 1-0, but, you know, I think maybe he's just settling in. It's interesting to ask the question about where Austin Trusty at 25 years old is going career-wise, whether he's, you know, bound to kind of like hone his craft down in the championship and then maybe make, if he's really spectacular, make a run back to the Premiership starting next year, or whether this is where water finds its level, whether he hasn't quite kind of just figured out what he's up to. So for Shinyashiki, I think it was interesting for you to frame it as this is a big transfer move for a guy to a league where he's their most stunning star. I would totally read this completely differently, which was that after all the stuff that went down, he was probably radioactive for pretty much every team that wanted to touch him. Charlotte probably basically said, you're never going to play for us again. We'll give you the release that you want. Told his agent to go find a soft landing spot. The agent failed miserably, and the only place he could get a job was in Azerbaijan. That's my read of the situation. By the way, I don't disagree with your assessment of innocent until proven guilty. There was another player involved in the sexual assault allegation. It from the very little that was released about it that was public, it sounded like there was a sexual assault that took place that Andrei Shinyashiki was present for. But that the allegation was that he was not the assaulter. But the problem is he's caught up in a scandal where all the charges were dropped. So the flip side of innocent till proven guilty, Matt, was there's no case. The case was dropped. Therefore, he's tarnished by the fact that there was no exoneration on some level. And again, I'm wearing a hat like a lawyer, but at the end of the day, like, there are a lot of I would call him middle-aged, right? He's like a 24, 25-year-old player who had, I mean, he finished at DU at 23. So he may even be 26 right now. So he's in the kind of middle age of his soccering career. He produces a couple goals a year. He's only really useful as a striker and sort of as a winger, but not really. He's a very known quantity. There's not a lot of remaining upside for him. So basically, he's mostly downside and risk for most teams to take on. They're just going to see him as, you know, a potential liability as opposed to a future asset. And that's probably why he's in a backwater league that, to their credit, the champions of the Azerbaijan League do get into the qualifying rounds of the UEFA Champions League. And I think they were, last I saw, participating in some of the early rounds of the Europa League. So anyways, long story short, we wish Andrei Shinyashiki well. but I think his career is not exactly going as planned.
Check out all the content from the Charlotte Observer. Mark had some really good reporting on that, both the initial breaking of the story and then some other stuff as well. So, Mark, let's get to it. Listeners, we're now going to discuss the Porrick Smith press conference that we had earlier today that I was a part of. We featured that raw audio in its entirety from start to finish, unlike some other outlets, from on our pod feed earlier today. So that should already be in your feed. It's about 27, not quite 30 minutes long. I would encourage you to, if you're listening to us now having not heard that, to pause this episode right now and listen to that in its entirety for context as well. Mark, you've heard it as well. I guess just if I'm going through my big picture thoughts here, Mark, first of all, from a no one good FC standpoint, Mark, I think everyone who is in the room from a press standpoint, I was there, Brendan Plone was there, Braden Nurse was there, Pat Radigan from Footy 5280, the DNVR representative would have been Mitch Carroll. I think that's everyone. I apologize if I'm missing anyone. But so, Mark, there was a lot of energy around this after all of the conversation we've had the last 2 weeks about the coverage around the team, around how we handle that, the intermediaries, the inside baseball part of it, and whether or not we're too soft or what all of that ends up looking like. And I want to believe that even our most ardent critics from the last 2 weeks, Rabbi, listened to that audio, listened to the way questions were phrased, the content of them, and how tactful they were, but still coming from the point of the venom and the frustration from the fan base and completely valid frustrations with the club, that the answers that we got, semi-dodgy, semi-half answers, kind of ambiguous, corporate GM speak and everything, that's vindication for us and for everyone else on No One Good FC, that the reason why fans are not getting answers or why stuff isn't clear or not detailed and direct is not because of the way that we handled the press conference. Mark, it was a very typical Porrick Smith is good at talking a whole lot, not really saying a whole lot, not directly answering the question, needing to be asked a follow-up question to get kind of any really inside information. And while he's a very long-winded, rambly Irish person, Mark, Rabbi, you might be familiar with another one of those, by chance. That's okay in general. That is to be expected almost, but a lot of the, you know, 25, 27 minutes that we were given this afternoon, he spent providing context that no one in the room really needed, that we already knew. And I think the majority of the people who are going to go through and listen to that audio twice and nitpick it and read between the lines and annotate and everything didn't need that as well.
Did you think he was filibustering at all? Like that I have to do a press conference, I will talk, and if I talk enough, it'll be, you know, nobody else will get to ask what they want or get the questions, the answers that they need?
I think that's a really good question, to be honest, Mark. We're probably going to set a record tonight, folks, for Ask HTHLs on a single episode with all the questions that we got on Twitter after that. I have to believe, Mark, with how much how prevalent that discourse was on social media over the course of the past 2 weeks, that the comms team and other people around the club had to have been aware that that was the tone, or that was the preface upon which so many members of the press were coming into that press conference. And from a media training standpoint, like they had to have made Porrick aware of that. I hesitate to say that he did it intentionally or that was exclusive, because Mark, we've both sat in those conversations. Like, Porrick is a long, rambly kind of person. I had two whole pages in my planner of questions. I could have talked to Porrick for an hour and it just be me, listeners, and we still would not have gotten to every single question that we had. So do I think it was, I don't know. Rabbi, Porrick's really busy now that he's president. He's got lots of meetings and everything. I don't think it's unreasonable that it was this time last week that the club was talking to me and other members of the press about making Porrick available and tentatively discussing what that schedule would be like, and Porrick already having a lot to do. That is typical with precedent. and his actions were typical of precedent. That does not mean that it wasn't also convenient that they scheduled him in a time where if they could have made him available for an hour, that they chose not to. I don't like speculating on that, Mark, because I've seen so many other moments where that's been true and it's been valid, but I can completely understand the fan that feels like that. And I'm saying that, Rabbi, knowing that some of my biggest haters from the last 2 weeks are going to use this as evidence that I'm secretly a plant, or that, you know, I'm a part of the problem because I'm not willing to say something that I can't say definitively. But yeah, it was convenient. It was convenient that we only got 30 minutes. It was convenient that Porik gave really long-winded answers to even preface before he started to address the questions directly. It was convenient that a member of the Rapids Digital team was there and got a question after everybody got the first round that prevented everybody, with the exception of me, from getting a second question as well. That is not something that typically happens, even when we get Robin Fraser for 20-25 minutes post-game as well. But yeah.
Well, that's good inside baseball. I love it, because you're really revealing how a good comms team deflects and controls. I think what they were trying, of course, to do was avoid the famous from a number of years ago situation of, I don't even remember the name of the GM, Red
Paul
Bull.
Paul Bravo?
No, Red Bull had a very famous, like, town hall meeting.
Oh, the why'd you fire Pet Key? And it was,
yes.
They had hired Jesse Marsh, so Jesse Marsh was there, and then was it, oh, I can remember his face, and then he went to Toronto, and I can't remember his, I'm gonna Google him right now, and then be like, oh my god, how did I forget that guy's name? But yeah, they were avoiding that to a certain extent, Rabbi, but like the...
They always do, and that's, to some degree, it's impressive that they're able to manufacture and control, but the flip side of that is, like, it's so sterile and without the ability to truly ask the questions you want to ask that, like, it's not particularly useful. Anyways...
Every single answer, Mark, almost feels like it was practiced and pre-rehearsed and it was workshopped within the front office and then, right, you know, put out and everything. Like, there's so many quotes that I have, folks, from Porik in a press standpoint where I might as well just be like, it looks like something that you put in as fluff to fill in to a press release of the, you know, we're so excited to welcome Sidney Tavares. You know, we feel that, you know, he's the midfielder that we've been looking for and, right, and yada, yada, yada and everything. So,
right. If you scripted it in advance and you wrote it, it would have come out the same way. Or if you'd written it as a press release. What I was going to say to that end is, you know, I only listened to about 5 minutes of it. It was all I could stand. And I just skimmed around.
Didn't miss anything.
Other
than the 3 or 4 points that I'm going to bring up, Rabbi.
Well, in your micro and your macro thing that you said at the very beginning as a joke was like, it's an interesting way to frame things, Porik. But like, he really worked very hard to say things like, we're not where we want to be, we think there's more quality in the locker room, a lot of this is because Diego Rubio was hurt, you know, a lot of teams struggle when their really great players are hurt, and da da da. It's kind of like, I don't think anybody walked into that press conference expecting a mea culpa where Porik said, we've gotten this all wrong. The Rapids way was incorrect. We need to rebuild this team from a completely different standpoint. We went into this naively and we didn't build the team that was going to be, you know, successful from the beginning. Like, he didn't say any of that. He basically said, you know, we had the right idea, but the execution didn't come out the way we'd like it, but we'll keep trying. And it was kind of like, but it feels like that's an admittance that you're not going to do anything differently and you're going to hope to get different results. All right, keep going, Matt.
So to your point, Mark, so many, I've heard it from Porik, I've heard it from Robin, I've heard it from players and everything, like the fairly or unfairly, or as much as like this isn't giving you what you want, listeners, everybody at the club's blaming injuries at this point. And I think there's a valid statement in that you lose your most important attacking player for, you know, Rubio, I think, you know, has played what, 7-8 games at this point, Mark. We got what, 45 minutes of Jack Price combined as well. We know how important that those two players are. Rabbi, we both think the Philadelphia Union are a well-run club. We both like Jim Curtin and everything. If you had told me that you were, you know, let's say Jose Martinez, who, Mark, I think we believe is a top five D-mid in Major League Soccer, and Daniel Gosdag, who was acquired for less than $2 million in a transfer fee, reportedly, and is a very good number 10, an underrated number 10 in MLS, because he's not Thiago Almada, he's not Hany Mukhtar, he's not Carlos Gil, is still a very good and incredibly important player. If you had gotten less than 500 minutes of those two players, all comps, I don't know that Philadelphia Union are in a League's Cup semifinal against Messi right now. I don't know that they make it to a semifinal to play LAFC in the Champions League, and I don't believe that they're where they are right now in the MLS Eastern Conference standings. That being said, Mark, the Philadelphia Union are a deep team. If they had one of those injuries, they would have reacted accordingly and probably quickly. And good teams are able to overcome injuries. Good front offices and good general managers are able to make signings after you have that. You knew that Jack Price was out, the home opener, the second home game of the season as well, Mark. And you replaced him with Danny Leyva. Rabbi, correct me if I'm wrong. We are still waiting for Danny Leyva's first game as a member of the Colorado Rapids. You know how long it took Connor Ronan to have his first good game for the Rapids?
Oh, good game. You just said Danny Leyva to have a game with the Colorado Rapids. Then you corrected it to good game. Yes, you are right.
It took Andrew Gutman 25 minutes to have a good performance for the Colorado Rapids. So Danny Leyva is duct tape over the Hoover Dam exploding in the next episode, in the next movie, in the next iteration of Fast and the Furious.
Spoken like a true engineer, Matt.
Yes. So that's where we're at as far as that. So I can understand it's a valid excuse that you were, Mark, as well. But like at the same time, like if it was that big of a deal to where you needed so much attacking help and everything, why weren't you set up to sign Navajo the first day of the transfer window? Why wasn't he set up to where then you could move the paperwork forward and he could have had an influence on Leagues Cup and then be in a better fitness standpoint to try and help the season as well? So I understand, and I want to give empathy and validity to the point of you lose probably your two most important players for effectively the season, or Rubio, let's say Rubio a third to 40%, Jack Price effectively the entire season. The way that you have course corrected in that regard was not good enough. That is an indictment on the depth of this team, Mark, and that first and foremost falls on the person responsible for roster building, who is Porik Smith. None of the other young center backs challenging when Danny Wilson and Lal Sabubakar have been so poor for long stretches and everything. On some level, there's a lack of trust or a misevaluation by the coaching staff in that validity, or that's a statement, Mark, that on some level they're just not that ready or they're not that good. The fact that Ollie LaRaz hasn't broken into this team, given the issues that we've seen in midfield, we'll see whether or not he gets opportunities now that Brian Acosta is gone. I should point out as well, Rabbi, that the two gaffes that we really saw from Ralph Priso, who started in that game for Houston, in that game against Houston Dynamo 2, Mark, those are mistakes that I have seen at most once from Ollie LaRaz this entire Rapids 2 season.
And Prizzo's made those mistakes in senior team games too. He's been, I think, amongst players that I'm let down by the most this year, he's probably the most. I mean, in that we bought him expecting that he would kind of continue to grow as a player, and I don't think he has. So,
okay, Mark, you want to say that losing Diego Rubio doesn't help you. Darren Yapi hasn't scored a goal. Yaps has the yips. Kevin Cabral is a bust at this point. He's got two goals in league play, and both of them are tap-ins where the guy who had the assist...
He's been awful. And Cole Bassett's had a bad year. He's been hitting posts again. He's back to being Paul Bassett. And some of that is that he's a little unlucky, but you can only go so many seasons calling a guy unlucky before you say, you know, he's a couple millimeters short here and there, which means he's not striking the ball well enough, which means it's a skill ability. It's a skill thing and not a luck thing.
Yeah. And so that's where then on some level, the coaching staff hasn't gotten at some point there. Someone needs to take accountability for we weren't set up to weather those injuries despite having plenty of time to prep for them. You know, Rubio came in hurt. He had the loose body removed from his knee. And then it was his knee, Mark. And then it was his oblique. And then more recently, it's been a back injury. And now he's fine, obviously, in training, played in the Rapids 2 game. Presumably, I would expect, Mark, unless something new has happened in the last 4 days of training, that he will not be on the injury report. He will not be listed on the availability report in that he is not questionable. He is not out for this coming Sunday, most likely. But then, like, you had time to get that. So either you did a poor job of selecting players to be next man up in ways that Porrick Smith did a fantastic job of that in 2021. I look at Stephen Badish, a younger version of Stephen Badishore, a younger version of Drew Moore, Nicholas Mesquita, the aforementioned Andre Shinichiki were all good role players and glue guys for that 2021 team that Porrick kept referencing as the standard and, oh, we were so close to that, can we get back to that and everything. And then, okay, like those, that tells me that those guys aren't there anymore. Those guys don't exist. So you are responsible for not having them.
And the other thing is, you know, you use the phrase next man up, which is another thing that's important about having a good soccer team is having a roster that's, it doesn't have to be 30 deep, but if it's 23 deep, then if three guys that you were expecting to do something really great don't come good, then there's three guys behind him. The fact that Darren Yapi, there wasn't really anybody behind him at striker who could fill in after also Diego Rubio had already gone down. The fact that Cabral isn't really particularly, there's nobody really behind Cabral who's that impressive. I mean, you know, Cabral, I think, was penciled in as the solution to Jonathan Lewis's lack of production. So then Cabral's not productive.
He's been worse than any version of Jonathan Lewis we've seen.
Right, but Jonathan Lewis isn't particularly productive either, so you don't really have other options, right? You know, Robin Fraser looks at the 17 or 18 possible options to start in any given week, and he goes, it doesn't really matter which of these guys I pick. None of them is really going to get the job done. You know, with a few exceptions, Connor Ronan being able to be a solid number eight defensive midfielder type presence in the team. Gutman has been good since he came on. Keegan Rosenberry has been mostly good, except for a few little hiccups here and there. But I think the only player on this team who deserved even mentioning in the All-Star game kind of conversation as like a guy who you might even throw a vote to, I'm not saying he should have gone, but someone could have thrown him a vote, would be William Yarbrough, because he's faced a lot of shots, he's turned away a lot of shots, and he's turned a lot of 3-0 games into 1-0 games for the Rapids, in the sense that they should have lost a lot worse than they didn't. But anyways, all right, we're off topic, sort of, maybe, I don't know. We're basically, what you're doing here, Matt, which I really love, is you're refuting, kind of point by point, you're what they called in the old internet days, fisking the Porrick Smith press conference, which is every point that Porrick would make about why the roster wasn't, you know, was constructed properly but was unfortunate, or every reason why the Rapids should have been better than they were, you're basically like, no, it shouldn't have been. It's, and you and I, I'm not saying I'm just here for my looks, Matt, which would be bad considering this is radio, but you know, but yeah, you're breaking it down pretty nicely.
Yeah, fine. Injuries are an excuse. What did you do to get competent players who could fill in that gap? Are those players underperforming to where they're not able to fill that gap? Or is there something the coaching staff is not doing in order to take advantage of that? Someone in there, Mark, it's not their fault that Price or Rubio are injured. It's their responsibility that they haven't filled that in and done a better job of that. And I want to believe, the hope then is, Mark, I don't think it's safe
I
this
want
season,
to believe
is that
X-Men posters, X-Files poster style.
Yes, is that Tavares fills part of the gap in midfield, and then Navajo fills part of the gap in the defense as well. So there's that, which brings me to kind of my next point, Mark, of just there were almost in every single answer, Porrick at some point in part of his providing context or providing his preface to the question was based on going back to the successes of, or the gradual almost success of 2019, the success of making the playoffs in 2020 under extreme extenuating circumstances, and then obviously the wonderful regular season success that was 2021. And then similarly, Mark, my frisking the presser, frisking the answer, that response would
fisking,
be...
Fisking.
Fisking. Fisking, excuse me.
Frisky? Matt's getting frisky with the fisking.
Yes. My fisking response to that, Rabbi, would be, like, we all know at this... there's so much data and so much hindsight, Rabbi. 2016 was an anomaly. That was noise, not signal. That was chaos, not not consistency. And then the same thing for 2021. They caught lightning in the bottle. They were underestimated massively. They flew under the radar for much of the season. Pretty much everything went right in terms of not being injured, in terms of somebody being good. Now, there wasn't a consistent goal scorer other than really Barrios in 2021, but somebody was always hitting, and they were good enough in the moments that they needed to be. And then, like, we knew that team, the question that we all had, Rabbi, was whether or not that was, whether or not they were a paper tiger. And let's be real, they went up against a team that you know, they lost in the first round of the playoffs in a game that they dominated from a performance standpoint. They couldn't finish. Portland had one opportunity. Portland finished. Like, that is that closed the book narrative-wise, that fulfilled the preconceived prophecy that all of the Rapids doubters and the Rapids haters had and everything. And even if you want to talk about that team, Mark, like, let's go through and everything. Danny Wilson and Lalas Abubakar are a shadow of themselves. Austin Trusty's gone. Andreas Mekhsyu is in his first year in MLS. I know Wanners has been hating on him and everything. I still think he's capable. It took you basically 2 years to find the competent replacement for Sam Vines, going from Vines to Lucas Estevez to the mad science experiment that was going on at the left back position this season with Sam Nicholson, once it took a game and a half to figure out that Alex Gerstbach wasn't good enough. And then now you've finally gotten Andrew Gutman. Could you have gotten Andrew Gutman that summer when he had just come to Atlanta and he was looking for a loan opportunity because he wasn't starting as well? Kellen Acosta gone. As I talked about last week, Brian Acosta was not him in terms of his replacement. It's now taken you 18 months in order to replace what you lost in Kellen Acosta. All the other moves, Mark, in a vacuum that Porik's made as far as exiting or departing players from that 2021 team, I can forgive, or I can understand that there was something in the bigger picture that he had an idea. The macro, as Porik referred to in his answer to, I think, the first question, one of the first couple questions in the presser as well. That's the one that I still can't understand, Mark. That's the one where, like, you sold him for a king's ransom of the most you were going to get in MLS, and then you still haven't viably replaced him. And I'm still not sure that GAM and the other assets were put to good use in that regard. You could argue, Rabbi, that we've been waiting for that Navajo is the first real plausible, viable, I'm him replacement to Kai Kamara in terms of individual quality, creating chances for himself, making things easier or elevating the players around him, and at the same time being a good combination with Diego Rubio. Jossie's artist was not that. Darren Yapi obviously wasn't that. As much as we want to say that, you know, Kai Kamara is, you know, was team obliterator and was problematic and had many other flaws to him and was an aging player and everything, like, they haven't had a player of that status as well. So Porik wants to reference 2021. That's the standard. That was proof of concept from the Rapids way. I am fisking to that in saying that there was so much about that was an anomaly. They caught lightning in the bottle. It clearly wasn't sustainable, and none of those players are here. And then even then, this window right now, you are just now replacing some of those players that you moved on for the most value that you've gotten. And if any one of these guys don't hit, Mark, if Tavares ends up being a bust, Rabbi, January of next year, I'm going to be saying we're still looking for the replacement of Kellen Acosta 2 years later. That is first and foremost on the general manager. Which brings me to my next point, Mark, from my original question that I asked about accountability. I thought Porik actually did a really good job of explaining how he's holding others accountable and what that looks like and everything from an org chart standpoint. I have to believe, Mark, there is a very plausible Porik and the people within one degree of Kevin Bacon of him are seriously considering, at what point do we do the calculus of Robin Fraser's future at the club? I don't believe that right now he's on the hot seat. I guess if they lose 7-0 on Sunday, then we'll be reevaluating that. I don't know that Robin's fate is tied to Sunday's result in the same way that Anthony Hudson's fate was tied to losing that game 1-0 in Atlanta back in 2018, whenever it was. But, like, that's now a plausible thing that we're discussing. Where I was frustrated with that answer, and where I think it's still not clear to me, Mark, is it's not clear that KSC cares from the standpoint of Wayne Brandt, Brian Crookham, and Porik Smith have proven themselves to the only person who matters, which is really Josh Kroenke, and they've done enough to where they've got job security and then can operate the club how they see fit. And then Josh is mostly just letting them run it on autopilot. It's not clear to me that
there's no accountability.
Porik's holding everyone below him accountable. Porik is not being held accountable by the one person who could get rid of him.
Well, I mean, to be fair, this is going to be a funny use of the concept, to be fair, there's no accountability because there's no expectations, in the sense that, like, I don't think there's any. And so this gets to the original sin of the Colorado Rapids that we often talk about. And when people complain occasionally that we don't hold the Rapids accountable when we talk about them, what I'm about to say is, like, you know, a piece of evidence number one that we really do. Like, this podcast comes in on a regular basis kind of pointing out that the ownership group doesn't have any aspirations for this club other than to hold the space for the real estate that might eventually be sold, or to realistically, continue to inflate the overall price of the club as clubs in Major League Soccer continue to appreciate in value until they can sell it for a massive profit over what they invested in when they originally bought the club in 2007. So the idea is the ownership doesn't expect the management team to win. They expect to produce a team at a low cost that can compete. And actually, that's not the worst thing in the world. And as a Rapids fan, supporter, and journalist, I think there's a way to run a club on that level. But if your aspirations are you need to catch lightning in a bottle and everything needs to be incredibly perfect in order to win MLS Cup, otherwise you're just barely scraping along, it's getting into the playoffs based on the amount of money you spend a year, that's really rough. And that's always going to be really rough. There are only two solutions to get out of this conundrum where the Rapids will compete without winning a championship in the KSC era. Solution one, end the KSC era. Sell the team to someone who does have higher aspirations, who will spend Matt, do we have to remind our listeners right now? There's a team in Major League Soccer right now with a starting lineup of three designated players that is Lionel Messi, Sergei Busquets, and not technically, but effectively, Jordi Alba. Those are mind-blowing giant stars that the Colorado Rapids don't even approach on the microscopic level. Like, we're just, you know, these are giants and the Rapids are playing with bugs by comparison. No offense, Diego Rubio, but, like, that's the league we're playing in right now. And to be fair, nobody in Major League Soccer is competing with Miami on expenditure and talent right now. But that being said, like, we're just like light years behind where that's at. The other solution to KSC, you know, selling KSC is the league as a whole creating a ceiling and a floor, which are much closer together. Because right now, and this has been a complaint that every journalist for The Athletic and a lot of people have written about, apparently owners meetings at this stage of Major League Soccer, and then I'll get off my soapbox, don't worry. Owners meetings at this stage of Major League Soccer basically involve 27 owners talking about spending more money to get to become the best league in the world, and one or two owners in the league, Kroenke being one of them, basically saying, like, nah, we're good. You know, we don't want to spend any money. And so there's no expectation that the Rapids are going to spend, you know, anything above the minimum, raise the minimum that you have to spend on a team, and lower the maximum, the minimum number of DPs that a team must have. And potentially the Colorado Rapids will start to compete again because, you know, if everything's pretty close to equal money wise, you know, you're just up to the craftiest GM and the best academy to win championships. We haven't had the best academy lately. That's really hurt us. And no matter how crafty our GM is, it doesn't make up for the lack of highfalutin talent that we lack.
Yeah, Mark, it's not a productive use of our time to repeatedly discuss things that we cannot change and that cannot change.
But we'll Kroenke's do it anyway not, sometimes.
Kroenke's not selling the team. Porik and Wayne just got contract extensions and everything. KSC has been proven to be, well, they've moved off of coaches semi-quickly in certain situations where there's expectations. They don't move off from front office and executive staff very quickly. They're generally very lenient, very patient, and they give them time to execute a vision in that regard. So, like, look, like, Porik's not going anywhere. You know, we're about to, you know, have a couple Ask HTHLs, Mark, about what protests could look like and everything. Every single Rapids fan could show up with a banner on the next home game on September 16th or whatever it is with a Porik out sign and then walk out of the stadium. I don't think Josh is firing Porik that following Monday as well. So it's not productive for us to discuss things that aren't changing and are not going to change anytime soon. KSC is not selling. Wayne Brandt is your main person from a business standpoint. Porik Smith is the highest level executive at the club. He's the person, first and foremost, top down responsible for the technical side of things. Brian Crookham's running the academy. Even if KSC wanted a new stadium right now, even if they did what that crazy idea that we had, Rabbi, when we talked about potentially what would happen post Sporting Goods Park in a podcast that is from like April of 2020 that we did during COVID and everything, even if KSC said we're turning that big huge parking lot just, I think it's the one to the west of the can of Ball Arena, that fits the footprint of DSG, we're turning that into the next version, into DSG 2.0. Even if they said that tomorrow, Mark, that is 5 years away from a construction standpoint. We're not getting a downtown stadium. KSC is not going anywhere. Pork's not going anywhere. And they're not suddenly about to double or triple the transfer fee budget. We can't change that. Us asking Pork that is not a productive use of our time, a productive use of one of the few bullets that we got in 25 minutes to ask him something tactfully to try and get an information, given what we just talked about, his approach from an inside baseball standpoint. And so, like, we're not going to talk about that. A few news and notes, Mark, that we got concretely. Pork confirmed the interest and the almost signing of Caden Clark, and that following through on paperwork from RB Leipzig that wasn't able to happen at the last minute. And then he mentioned that there was a championship attacking player who failed his medical, otherwise they would have looked at as well. Mark, I have strong reason to believe, listeners, that that was Sadia Manesh, the winger from Hull City as well. And then Pork did go into some detail about the medical staff and the frustrations they've had with fitness and with injuries as well, Mark, and how that wasn't really a thing in the past. And the key thing there is that they've actually brought in an outside consultant whose name I don't have written on my notes. Pork said it in the presser. Go listen to that, folks, where there's going to be a proper, like, thorough medical for Jack Price as he continues to go through and finishes out his rehab coming back from his Achilles injury. And then generally talking about that from a scouting standpoint. From a injury standpoint. And as I've already reported and confirmed as well, Mark, you know, the club was doing an internal investigation about what they could do from an infrastructure standpoint that would have been more weatherproof and then more sustainable and not had issues when weather gets crazy because Colorado spring in April does what it wants and everything. I know there were a lot of listeners who wanted me to ask the question that I actually had pointed out, Mark, actually getting confirmation from a yes or no question from the club as to whether or not the reported MLS PA grievance, whether or not that was legitimate and whether or not that came from a Rapids player and that was due to that period they had in March, April, May, I can't remember at this point, for that long string of injuries, and whether or not there was effectively a grievance to the MLSPA saying, hey, this is an unsafe and like unacceptable working environment given where Major League Soccer is. That does not change the fact that the club is already looking into that from a staffing standpoint and from an infrastructure standpoint, and now they're evaluating it on the players that have been most affected with that. The club's taking action. It would be great, and I will want and I will do everything I can in the future, listeners, to get confirmation whether or not that grievance was true, whether or not MLS was holding the Rapids' hand or basically saying, like, hey, UMFers, actually do this. KSC, you're spending this money or there's going to be hell to pay. I want to get confirmation on that. The fact is that stuff's happening, and the fact that we've gotten confirmed of what the results and what the actions are and a rough timeline of that happening it was not worthwhile, Mark, me spending one of my two questions that I had today asking on that, because I already know what the result is. And so this is a scandal that effectively has become.
Yeah. And you don't ask questions you're not going to get an answer to.
Yes. And so that's the So those are the thoughts that I had on this. But I hope, listeners, this has been instructive. I hope the last three episodes that we've had of HTHL has been instructive. And I hope now providing, you know, in the past we've provided audio, but I hope it's now clear to you that how we handle this and how we ask these questions are far more delicate than simply walking in to the press conference and then saying, Porik, you missed the playoffs last year. If you win the wooden spoon this year, will you resign out of the as the best interest of the club? Porik's so good, and from a media training standpoint, in being so clear, Porik doesn't say a whole lot and doesn't really answer questions. He possibly filibusters as well, listeners. And so I was having this conversation with Brendan, Mark. Listeners, I don't know if you know, Brendan Plone and I live relatively close to each other, and when there's an opportunity, we carpool to the stadium either for games or for other stuff.
I didn't know that. Mark. That's cool.
Yeah, we carpooled.
So environmental.
Yes, we carpooled specifically, Rabbi, so that we had, you know, 20, 25 minutes sitting on I-70 in the middle of, you know, the start of afternoon traffic to discuss and coordinate, because we were both fairly confident, Rabbi, that we were going to get the first two questions as Burgundy Wave and as the Denver Post. And so coordinating our questions so that we weren't overlapping with each other. But like the Mark, I could almost draw out a Venn diagram of the questions that are relevant that the fans actually care about. A question that I don't know exactly what Porik Smith is going to say. A question where he's actually going to at least somewhat address the question directly. One where it's not going to be all coach speak. And then one where it's actually instructive for what's going on in the future. So that it's a useful quote, and then B, also useful information. Listeners, in the four or five circles that I just outlined in this Venn diagram, there is a very small area that overlaps in the middle where all of them are in there. I think Brendan and I did a good job in terms of him asking about stuff going on below him. I asked about stuff going on above Porik from an org chart, from a leadership standpoint and everything. But, you know, like I said, it's just it's really hard when you ask about it when Mitchell Carroll from DNVR Rapids asks about the mistakes that were made in the past from a roster building standpoint, and Porik has to preface that by saying, well, we had a really great back three, and Danny's gotten injuries, and we sold Austin Trusty, and it took us some time, and Andreas Maksut, like the get to the actual answering of the question, we're not in a position to control that. And I hope the last three episodes of HTHL, how much we've talked about this, and now you seeing that in action, both in rather than that thought process being us doing it individually on a notepad or doing it amongst ourselves as in discussing amongst the other media, the fact that this was such a public process in terms of the prep and the research going into this interview that happened in such a public way on the Facebook, on Facebook, on Twitter, and then seeing now what that result looks like, that you have a better appreciation for how do we ask a question to where we just don't get a PR answer, non-answer, avoiding it, and then not being able to follow up and really hold Porik's feet to the fire. And I hope in that regard you have a little bit more empathy for No One Good FC, and that it's the similarly, Mark, No One Good FC is in its position in terms of media information and in terms of investigative journalism and holding the club accountable is in the same position as the players on the field are, in that it's not really our fault. We are where we are. We're doing our best, and really it's Porik Smith's fault for not setting us up to be more successful.
Fans, No One Good FC is a name that we've adopted for ourselves because
don't signal boost him, Rabbi.
An unnamed individual on Twitter said No One Good covers the Rapids. So if you missed a couple shows ago, we talked about that before. So we're now everybody who covers the Rapids is now No One Good FC. All right, let's move along to some HTHLs, Matt.
Yeah, we've got a bunch. A bunch of people didn't use hashtag AskHTHL, Mark. It just turned into it was basically the stock exchange in terms of just like banter back and forth,
yelling
at each other. Yes. So I'm just going to do this in order in which they were received, Rabbi. So first, several questions we got from Jared Geisler. What's up, Jared? Shout out to Burgundy Social, whatever you're doing with that. I'm really excited to see what happens. Oh, and congrats on the baby as well. We need more Rapids fans in the world. Two questions, Matt, about accountability. Did you derive an answer and or can you tell what you took away from his response? I kind of already talked about that from an accountability standpoint, but Mark, then the follow-up question to that was, is Robin firmly on the hot seat? I think it is firmly in discussion. I do not think it is imminent. Rabbi, your thoughts?
My take on the hot seat issue is that he's got the Rapids seem to have my take is this. Historically, the Rapids seem to have, you get 1.5 bad seasons. That's it. So Basically,
I'd argue Robin's had 1.5 bad seasons.
So it's interesting. That's well said. I think I'm trying to go back. Pablo Mastroeni had a bad 2014 and a bad 2015. He redeemed it with a good 2016, and then he had a bad 2017, and so they got rid of him in the middle of that year. So the idea here being Pablo Mastroeni had 2.5 bad years, but the one good year offset it. All right, so then you get a slew of different players individuals who are interims, none of whom added up to anything significant. Then you wind up with Anthony Hudson, who basically had 1.5 bad years. There were the bright spots of Anthony Hudson were some brief moments at the first 3 months of his leadership where the team looked sort of like they had a plan going forward. And then you get Robin Fraser, and with Robin Fraser, you got basically a quarter of a good season, to kind of end when he took over after Hudson was fired and while the interim was in. Then you got one good season that was messed up because it was a COVID season. Then you got then you got 2021, which was a very good season, followed by 2022 and 2023, which have been a year and a half of bad seasons. So my postulate here, Matt, is you buy yourself you get a total of 1.5 good seasons unless you have – sorry. If you have 1.5 bad seasons, you're getting fired. If you get a good season, it may extend your lifespan of that like a whole nother year, which means I think that – to my long-winded answer is I think he's got another half a season to prove himself. If things don't turn around by this time next year, he's gone. I think it's even possible that another bad year, he might be gone by June or July. But my take is Robin Fraser is on the clock till July 4th of next year to get things right. And if things don't go well by then, he's gone.
What do you make of the blame being placed on the uncontrollable rather than acknowledging the obvious personnel misses by Smith and Co? Already talked about that, Jared. They're blaming the injuries and they're not going to be publicly accountable in that regard. Do you walk away having learned or derived anything from the 25 minutes presser? If so, what? I took away that after 2 years sidelined, Jack was well more beat up than previously acknowledged. Do we even see Price and Burgundy? Jared, I think we've highlighted what we could, and a lot of this was us having a very good understanding and history and relationship with Porrick Smith, and I could see where a relatively new Rapids fans listen to that as being like, that was a lot of corporate mumbo-jumbo. Mark, do we see Price back in Burgundy? I think this is going to hinge on how quickly do we see him in training, like those last couple weeks of the regular season, or I know at times for players that don't play a lot in the regular season, they'll stay around for a couple weeks when you miss the playoffs because it makes it easier from a timing standpoint to then start ramping up for preseason as well. I think that's going to hinge on it. Mark, I wouldn't be surprised if the club decided to cut bait. I would not, if they don't like what they're seeing from an injury standpoint, I would not fault them in that regard. I think Jack Price would have a very soft landing in League One, certainly. I don't know what that money would look like. I think there's a championship team that would certainly get him on trial. And if he decided to move back to England, I think absolutely he'd have a place as long as he wanted in order to complete his rehab at Wolves as well. Mark, I think it's we haven't quoted Moneyball yet, Rabbi, but you remember the scene they have where they're, I can't remember if it's Rendon or they're trying to get rid of a pitcher and then somebody else, and there's like three or four moving parts that are happening simultaneously, and so they've got a bunch of people on hold, and then Jonah Friedman pauses it and asks Billy Bean, Brad Pitt's character, like, the do you believe in this or not, because like this is the kind of move that gets you fired. Mark, like the Rapids are clearly high on Marco Ilicha, despite the fact that he has not been able to unseat William Yarbrough. Yarbrough's in an option year, contract year for Diego Rubio. Jack Price is a team option as well. If you decide because you like the upcoming replacement for Yarbrough and that injury-wise it's too much of a concern or they're depreciating assets, that it's not worth keeping around Diego Rubio because you'd have to pay him, and you don't think Price is going to be unhealthy for a third year again, like the and those don't work out, Mark, or Price goes to the championship and is crushing it for a team that's competing for promotion. Will goes back to Mexico or continues to play in MLS and plays well. Diego Rubio goes back to Colo-Colo and is absolutely fantastic. And the guys you bring in to replace him, if Tavares is a bust, if Navajo's a bust, if Cabral, like those are the kind of moves where if you make all of those three and get rid of the middle spine of the team, the 8-10, the 6, and then the goalkeeper as well, and then that doesn't work out, they play well elsewhere, and the guys you replace them with don't. At a competent team with an ownership group that is remotely ambitious, that gets you fired by midsummer.
So let me go back to the question that you actually asked before you went off on this, which was, what's the deal with Jack Price? I'm not as high on Jack Price in terms of where he could land as you are, and not because he's not a great player, but because he's now just labeled an injury risk. I mean, the degree of injuries he's had at this point makes him a liability for any other team to pick up. I think he's like a club talisman, good time locker room guy, 1500 minute a season guy. I think the challenges with Jack Price, one, I do not think we will see him play this season. An Achilles tendon injury is, you know, when I mentioned it to my wife, and another player went down a couple weeks ago with an Achilles injury that I watched on the field, and Noah was watching, my wife, the physical therapist, the doctor of physical therapy, noted, and I just kind of looked at her and I said, oh, Achilles injury, and she was like, she's not a sports physical therapist or orthopedist, you know, she specializes in pelvic floor physical health, so it's a different part of the body, but nonetheless, she did take all the classes, and when I said, oh, it looks like an Achilles injury, she just kind of looked at me, and she's like, nobody comes back from that, and I was like, that was her comment, was basically like, I was like, I asked her specifically, like, how does the ligament get reattached, and what does that look like, and she's like, it's never quite right, you know, effectively was her answer, so that's not just so the thing with that and Jack Price is that he's had, you know, back and soft tissue and knee issues from last season also. And what I think that means is you've got two challenges. One, you want to get him back on the field, but you want to get him relatively healthy so that he can play enough minutes and you play him at the right time of the season. The hardest part about getting him on the field at the beginning of next year, Matt, is you're getting him on the field in Colorado when it's really cold and the field is really hard, which that might be a reason why his Achilles was torn this season in the beginning. Because if you remember, there was new turf out on that field and there were some questions as to whether it had fully settled yet or whether it was really good. You really don't want him out on the field playing unless the conditions are right. So early season, bad weather, not great, which means you're looking at bringing him on as like a 70th minute guy. So then what's his real value for the club? Like, you know, how often do the Rapids desperately need a change in central midfield, especially at the 8 or the 6 position late in the game to either spark something or to preserve a game? And is Jack Price really the guy? You know, he's really a dead ball specialist. You really want him for the first 75 minutes, not for the final 90. I mean, it'd be nice to bring him on from 70 to 90, maybe to whip in a couple of crosses, and then you put some big, beefy, 6'6" Alan Gordon clone type guy in there to bang balls in with his head and, you know, steal the game at the final minute. But, like, that's a luxury to have two roster spots for a big body target poacher and, you know, a dead ball specialist. Like, you know, we're not Manchester United. Like, you know, we don't have some back end positions we can give to specialists like that. So that's my take on Jack Price. On to your next question, Matt.
Daniel Bonifus, friend of the show, asks, who has the biggest slice of blame pie for this train wreck of a season? I've already said it on Twitter and on here. I think it's Porik. Mark, Porik, Robin, somebody else?
So it's hard to blame academy coaches for academy products because the kids who grow up in Colorado are the kids who grow up in Colorado. But man, the farm is bare right now. We are just really, really struggling. The fact that there's a couple guys who don't forecast to be first team players on Rapids 2 right now who are of the right age that they should be coming up. Like, Ollie LaRoz had an injury, I get it, but, like, you know, him and guys of his generation should have made it up. That's a reality, though. And you can't really blame Brian Crookham for the academy not you know, producing nonstop bangers, but that is also a culprit. So it's not a human being, but it's a whole system of human beings. All the coaches in the Rapids Academy and the academy director for not really, you know, identifying the talent and developing the talent altogether.
Not academy, like the...
No, but yes, my point stands, though. If you don't have... If you don't have any academy kids come up this season, then and be successful, then you don't have the Sam Vines and the Cole Bassetts and even the Dylan Cernas and Dylan Powerses of the previous year. The surprise player who helps produce things, Darren Yappe, is that guy for us, Matt, and he has zero goals and he's been really disappointing.
Fair, Scott Hammond. I agree with Jared. Matt, do you feel like your question was actually answered? And if so, what were your takeaways from it? Already talked about that, but Scott wanted to give you a shout out because you're always good for a question on Ask HTHL, and we appreciate you. Scott then asks again, is it acceptable that the team gave only 25 minutes for Pork to answer questions, or is it clear that the time was limited to prevent media from being able to really dig into the uncomfortable topics? Mark, I kind of already gave my thought on this, but now having, you know, what, 30 minutes to sit and stew on it, you know, do you feel any different about it?
Uncomfortable media topics and whether the media should come harder at Pork?
Whether or not they intentionally only gave us 30 minutes as opposed to more was a strategic move. Pork being especially long-winded was just him being on one, or whether or not that was tactical, and the fact that Rapids Digital got the ability to ask one of those questions when they would have had plenty of time to do so in private availability on any given day the rest of this week.
Totally tactical and not a surprise. I remember when Anthony Hudson was unveiled. Were you at that press conference, Matt?
I was. We were standing next to each other, Mark.
I love that you remember who you were standing next to. There were like 100 people, 80 people in the room, and like 40 of them were Colorado Rapids staff members, some of whom had like taken off their badges. And I think that they were trying to create artificial buzz, you know, kind of like piping music into the piping crowd noise into the stadium when the crowd isn't loud enough. And they did the same thing. They planted questions within their own staff and they asked questions. Mostly they didn't really have to. They only got like one or two. By the way, I'm used to that occasionally happening at the USL level, that, you know, you sometimes will do that. And to some degree, because I've seen it at the USL level, Matt, it's a literal Bush League move to say we don't have enough good questions or enough questions that we like from credentialed media. So we will create our own because things need to go our way. So, I mean, is it illegitimate? No. I mean, this is the new 21st century, you know, kind of like propaganda agitprop style of corporate media, where you produce the PR pablum that you want the community to consume. A complaint that Matt and you and I and Marco Cummings, formerly a writer on the Colorado Rapids for the Denver Post and a couple other outlets, used to complain about is the fact that the team really steals good stories for itself and steals breaking news for itself.
Retweet.
And refuses to release it to reporters because it wants the clicks on its website. To some degree, the digital media asking the question that it really wants to cut into and edit into a video and post on its website is a version of that, which is
we writers want of their own press releases.
Yeah, one could ask, and then I'll shut up. One could ask whether in the Colorado Rapids fantasy world, whether there is anything resembling independent media covering them at all, or whether they don't just get to put out all their own press and control the entire narrative from start to finish. I think they know why that's a bad idea, but I do think from time to time, they probably think to themselves, these petty reporters from independent outlets are kind of annoying.
Yeah, it's... I have some deeper thoughts on this, Mark, that I don't know that I've explicitly said to you, so I'll save. This is going to be another topic that we can dive into another time.
Another podcast.
I want to believe that I'm done criticizing the comms team, Mark. I've come to the both publicly and privately, I've come to the conclusion that they've got bosses and they're acting within the framework of what they're given, and they're not intentionally being part of the problem. They're not antagonistically being part of the problem.
No, they do what they're told.
There's so much of how the club's inner workings are, and to your point, the approach to external media, where while their intentions are good, the performance is good, the expected press, the XP, if you will, is good, but the ultimate result is that all we are is that on some level we're doing more PR because a lot of what we are, our access is not useful, Mark, because we only get the sanitized version. And on that level, all we're getting is the PR speak. And so all we're doing is amplifying, annotating, and then commentating, and at times constructively criticizing or having a go at that press release rather than the actual media component as well. And it's really hard to do. Like, if I'm being honest with you, Rabbi, like, we've talked about how much turnover there is in KSC because there's lots of people who work in soccer, and then if they do good stuff with the Rapids, they can find another job somewhere else in MLS, or the Rapids are an entry level position to try and get something at Ball Arena for the Avalanche or for the Nuggets as well. And I can't tell you how many times, Mark, I have cultivated a source, someone who I'm confident in, who's giving me good, who's providing good intel and everything and useful stuff locally and nationally, to where then they leave the club for various reasons. You know, I'll go out and say this, like the people, and I want to thank you. You know who you are if somehow you're listening to this podcast. You know, all the people who spoke to me, who gave me insight for the Eignergate editorial I had, which is, I would argue, the Old Testament of understanding that entire thing. And the only people who have a better understanding are Porik, Anthony Hudson, and Stefan Eigner themselves. Like, everyone who spoke to me, no one's at the club anymore. So that speaks to it. I had a bunch of questions, Mark, people on Burgundy Wave, people on HDHL in our mentions, and then me about the approach to protesting. And then I was actually at the Celtic for the opening of Premier League as well, and then ran into a couple of Rapids fans throughout the day. Obviously, I came in, Mark, for Fulham being at the 8 a.m., and we were watching the end of Arsenal's victory over Nottingham Forest, and then Aston Villa and Newcastle were coming in later. And so before, during, and after the Fulham game, I ran into separate people in the Rapids space who were asking me, and I was also sitting next to Dave Wegner, Mark, who, as you know, is I believe he's president, or he's one of the board people at C38, also the other Fulham fan in Denver. So people see me, people see him, they're open, they're listening to us talk about the Rapids and everything, they want to interject, and there's a lot of discussion, Mark, internally at C38. Dave, if I'm revealing something that you secretly told me in confidence that I didn't know about, I apologize, but I gotta break some news on this podcast since Pork won't give us anything interesting. C38's having internal discussions, Rabbi, about protesting, what that would look like. Could that be a TIFO? Could that be a walkout? What would that look like? And Dave's kind of response is similar to mine of the, like, if it's KSC, sell the team, that's not productive, that's not happening. Move downtown, not happening. Pork out, not happening. If you want the banner to be "We deserve better," if you want to chant like that, if some people want to walk out, if some people want to do what a number have talked about on at the tailgate of, like, let's just show up for the tailgate and then go home kind of a thing, I think there's a discussion to be there. You know, Mark, what should a useful protest look like? Or, as I've, you know, jokingly suggested, that won't change anything. If every single Rapids fan shows up to the next home game in mid-September with a banner that says "Pork out," chants "Pork out," and then they all leave the stadium, I don't think that moves the needle. Rabbi, what would you recommend to the supporter that wants to feel heard and understood and empathized with as they express themselves in a public space at the Richard?
So I'm a little softer than you on this one, Matt, which is, I believe the fans should illustrate and demonstrate their disgust with the situation, even if it's not specific or it's not extreme, right? You do not have to rent a plane to fly a banner over the stadium. You don't have to stage a 24th minute walkout. You don't necessarily have to get all the supporters to boycott the team for the rest of the season. There are two realistic things that need to happen. One is already going to happen no matter what, because I see it on Twitter and I know people are talking about it from the message groups that I'm in, also on Reddit. But the second thing still needs to happen. Thing one is season tickets need to not be renewed. And I don't mean en masse. I mean, when you take a look at whether you want to spend your cold, hard cash on the Colorado Rapids in 2024, you know, you need, when your ticket rep calls you to ask to renew, if you say, this team sucks, I'll buy a 5-team pack this year, but this is like, this is my trying to like decide whether I'm even going to stay involved in this club or not. Or you say, I'm not buying a season ticket, but I might buy a ticket once or twice next year if we turn things around. But like, you guys don't deserve my money. You know, if they struggle enough at the season ticket holder level, they will make changes. The only problem with that is the minute that it turns out that Lionel Messi is playing in Colorado, season tickets go through the roof and we're out of luck. That's because that's the best way to get to see him. Probably not going to happen next year, but that's the only, you know, caveat. But like, you know, we don't have to stage a massive team wide or supporter wide walkout in order for the front office to get the message. Front office has been getting the message year after year as season tickets decline. The second thing is, anything that gets a significant amount of press or media on social media or on non-MLS, non-Apple coverage will be notable, right? Like if Fox Sports or the Denver Post or any of the national papers who cover soccer even mention it, it'll be worthwhile. And so that'll probably be the most important thing that that we would want to see. Some sort of protest, some sort of reaction. You know, if the entire team wears green to remind us of the good old days when they wore green, or if the whole team holds Pouric out signs, or if the whole team, if the whole fan base, you know, waves like white surrender flags or something like that. That might be a good one. Or a 24th minute, you know, like, or everyone walks out at the 24th minute, doesn't come back till, you know, the second half. That would also be anything that is clear and obvious and demonstrates disgust. I think it would be notable and move the needle.
There was a question, last one that we have here, Mark, I think, for the night, is one that there was a long, there's been many a threads in the HTHL mentions on Twitter X. And so at one point, Jason Maxwell asked Mitchell Carroll, after listening to the press availability, do you want to revise any of your remarks on the Rapids way? I think Mitch asked a question that was related to it, Mark. And then I think Mitch had said some things on his own personal Twitter at Mitchell _Carroll, in case you were wondering, listeners, feel free to follow him and see some of his thoughts. He's had some really good bangers tweets wise on the Rapids the last couple weeks as well. So Mark, after listening to all of this, after looking at this as well, is the Rapids way broken? Does it need to evolve? Or do you think Pouric is onto something in some weird PR way in saying that we're happy with where we are in the macro, but zooming in the micro, there's a lot of work to be done and the club's to involve it? Or should we print out that Denver Post article, Mark, and light it on fire and start from square one?
Yeah, I mean, my objections, I'm the lamest guy in the world, and I know that on this, because my objections with the Rapids way when it originally came out was, what's wrong with Pablo Mascherani's way of playing soccer, which is, I liked grinding out, you know, 1-0 results. I liked having an identity that was, you know, kind of like brutal and Broad Street Bullies and very physical and very defensive minded. You know, it didn't work, but it was an ethos in the sense that it didn't work the years that we were doing it, but it didn't mean that we weren't going to eventually succeed at it, especially as a small market Moneyball type club. The message of Moneyball, a movie and a book that I love, Matt, we talk about all the time, is not used. And it's really interesting because if you read the book, you get a very strong sense of this, and that most people misunderstood Moneyball, the idea of it. The ethos of the book, the main thing of the book is not statistics will tell you everything you need, throw out scouting and just use statistics. No, the whole point was about arbitrage and about if you're a small market club and you can't compete on the same level as everyone else, then you need to find the inefficiencies in the marketplace to go after the players that other teams don't spend money on. To that end, Andreas Mackshu is a Moneyball type signing because most teams are going to spend all this crazy amount of money on a striker. Porik Smith is crazy like a fox and goes out and spends big money on a DP center back. Now, the problem with that is you have to get the right DP center back. But that being said, right, the upside of the Pablo Mastroeni defense first mentality for a Moneyball team is every team in this league wants to get a dribbly number 10, you know, pacey wingers, Sergio Busquets, you know, put the ball exactly where you want it type guy, and a striker who scores 25 goals a game. You come in and you spend $25 million to build the best, most defensive, brutal, you know, Lazio-style soccer team in America, you can win a championship that way. That's my objection with the Rapids way. That basically the Rapids way was the team saying, we want to be creative, attacking, forward-minding, parenthesis, just like everybody else. It means that we have to compete on the same level as LAFC and DC United and Inter Miami and Philadelphia Union in getting the exact same players that they want to get. They prioritize high talent, high velocity, highly valued scoring players. And suddenly our team does too. You know what? I would have really liked if they had really prized, you know, crunching defensive midfielders, incredibly talented right wings, right backs, right? And that was the DP player that you wanted to go get. The one last thing I'll say on this is even Inter Miami knows this. Because you know the player on Inter Miami who has suddenly looked spectacular since they got some good pieces around him? He's been connecting all the pieces. He's been overlapping. He's been dribbling really nicely. He's been swinging in the right balls. He's been in the right place all the time. And until this point, people were like, he's washed up. He's done. You know, he was just a big name signing because he's a former USMNT guy. It's DeAndre Yedlin. DeAndre Yedlin is playing great soccer right now. He's really connecting really nicely, and he was, to some degree, potentially, I wouldn't say a distressed asset, but an undervalued asset, and a guy who, with the wrong guys around him, wasn't getting it done. Those are the kind of guys that you can value in a non-Rapids Way system. So I don't think Porik is going to abandon Rapids Way. I don't think he said he was abandoning Rapids Way. I kind of wish we would abandon Rapids Way.
I think the issue with the Rapids Way, Mark, I think fundamentally the Rapids are being put in a position to fail and be relatively not competitive just purely from a financial standpoint. You know, Norwich City, Luton Town, whomever can't come up and then not spend money in order to be competitive. And this was the least bad answer to here is our circumstances and all of our preconditions. Here is our problem statement for where we want to go. Here is a plausible way that we can get there and also sell it to the fans in a way that there is hope for the future and like something that we can constantly be building towards. Like the flaw to that point, I don't think you, like, the answer to me, Mark, isn't get rid of the Rapids Way. It's get rid of ownership and get in somebody who's actually going to put the club in a position to be successful. I think the Rapids Way is the least bad answer to their circumstances, which again goes back to the first and foremost flaws that we have are at the top two rungs of the pyramid in leadership at KSC and in Porik and his role not being held accountable or fairly not being put in a position to be successful by the people above him. And he's working with what he can where he has. And let's be real, Mark, as much as fans want their, you know, want their raw meat and their pound of flesh and everything, Porik's never going to publicly come out and bite the hand that feeds him. You know, Rabbi, you and I have sat next to, have met a number of people from KSC who will very candidly tell us the, like, yes, we know, like, it's infuriating, we're doing the best with what we can, and I have met several former KSC, former Rapids employees, and this is not Richard Fleming, to be clear, folks, who when properly lubricated by certain adult beverages, will go off and provide all of these criticisms that we are saying as well and acknowledge it. You can't embarrass the brand publicly, and that's the one thing that Porik achieved in that regard. Mark, let's get out of here, because I gotta go have my own press conference with Blackjack and Hookers, and it's going to be at least 90 minutes long. Listeners, you can follow us on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at @LWSMattPollard, and at @Rapids96Podcast. I've changed our name because apparently I've been confusing some people, Mark, because they look up Holding the Highlands, so we are no longer on Twitter in our name, No One Good FC. Maybe I'll bring it back, maybe I won't, we'll see. You can check out all of our written content. Obviously, Mark, from a Rapid standpoint, will be publishing at our Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. Rabbi, we out of pint glasses, or are they still around?
Still have a couple
pint glasses. So if you would like our cheers to the 6-pint glass as you drown your sorrows in the factory of sadness that is the Rapids when they lose on Sunday to LAFC, head on over to our Substack. $5 a month or $42 for the year. That gets you a pint glass. And then maybe some other merch coming up that may or may not be t-shirt like in a couple of months as well. Obviously, all of my content Rapids related is at burgundywave.com. And then rate, review, share, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We're on a bunch of different podcatchers. And I said this a few times ago, we did have some issues with Spotify. If we're having any other issues with your podcatcher of preference, please get in touch at Rapids96Podcast. DMs are open. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskHDHL, or get at us in long form with @Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com. Listeners, we'll see you next week as we recap another embarrassing loss on the road.
Peace.